Hello travellers and welcome to podcast 188 in our series You Should Have Been There with me Mick Webb
and me Simon Calder, and today's topic is the two opposing sides of travel, the good and the bad, and there's also a bit of the ugly. I'm actually sitting across from Mick right now in a lovely part of Brixton Village outside a cafe called Brewgirls. Now, we got the idea of type 2 travel, or the two opposing sides of travel, from our last guest, Mike Richards. Of course, you can listen to that podcast anytime you like. He was talking about his book, The Travelling Ape, during which he explained the concept which he calls type 2 fun. This is how he explained it.
Type 2 fun is an experience you have on the road which objectively is not fun and is bad, essentially. So it could be your plans going wrong, or your car breaking down in the middle of the desert, or you getting ill somewhere with food poisoning and you having to find a way to the local hospital. And it's experiences at the time you think, wow, I'm out of my comfort zone, this is really difficult, you know, I would rather be at home right now. But strangely enough, all of these experiences are the ones that I look back on kind of most fondly, or at least you have sort of great anecdotes coming out from it. So I think in the book I talked about a trip to Israel where me and two friends were down by the Red Sea, and we went for a swim. And when we got back to our car, all of our belongings had been stolen, and we had literally just, you know, so we just had our swimming trunks and our bags gone with our passports and absolutely everything. So we had to drive back to Tel Aviv, a 4-hour drive, just wearing our swimming trunks, and then sort of plodded into the British Embassy again, just wearing swimming trunks, saying, okay, we have absolutely nothing. Can we find a way to get home, please? And fortunately, our mums collectively helped get us home. And at the time, we were gutted. We lost all the pictures of the trip. We lost, you know, valuable goods, although in the end, insurance paid for it. But I think when that was all sorted out, this trip was 15 years ago, and we still laugh about it to this day. And we did lots of great stuff on that trip. But actually, in some ways, that is a thing that, you know, stands out as a highlight in some ways. So I always try and remember this when I'm traveling in places where, when things appear to be going wrong, when you're delayed or things are taking longer than expected, instead of trying to fight it, just being like, okay, this is the reason why you're here in some ways, is to be out of your comfort zone in a new place. You know, there's uncertainty, there's some challenges, but actually it's how you deal with them that actually are some of the best stories. This is where the type 2 fun thing, I think, can be very helpful.
So we're talking about travel experiences that were certainly not much fun at the time, but became more fun with the retelling of the anecdote. I know it sounds like a medical condition, but I think type 2 fun is a very interesting idea and might actually be a powerful explanation of why it is we like to travel so much. The noted travel writer Paul Theroux said that travel is glamorous only in retrospect, which I take to mean that it is all pretty well type 2 fun rather than marvellous when you're doing it, but that I think is quite an extreme position.
Yes, but I think if you are a travel writer, then you have an interest in things going wrong. And I draw a difference here between a lot of mainstream travel journalism, which is to do with telling people how marvellous it is to be in Scarborough or San Sebastian or Santiago de Chile or wherever, and travel writing, where you obviously want things to be interesting, and as with any drama, that comes from conflict rather than from everything going tremendously well. So yes, most of us though are simply concerned with things going right when we are travelling, and most definitely not going, tango uniform, as the saying is in the travel industry.
But don't you think that type 2 travel fun is something that most of us actually enjoy? Oh my goodness, this is a marvellous thing. What, could you tell us what this is? We're just doing a recording.
It's a bagel with like three types of meat, melted cheese, pickles and sauce.
Wow, this is a... this is the bagel from Brugel. So this is the gel bit of it, and what an amazing looking bagel it is as well.
It is. I thought this place was called Brugels as a kind of pun on Bruegel, the well-known, I think, Flemish artist, but in fact, no, it's because this place serves beer and it also serves bagels, and we've got half each of this mighty mountain, and I think it's your turn to talk, which must make it my turn to eat.
Yeah, okay, I'm just done. What I was saying before we were so delightfully interrupted was that I think most of us actually enjoy the idea of the Type 2 travel fun. And I first noticed this when I travelled to Le Continent by ferry and later wrote down my recollections in a best-selling, I mean unfinished and unpublished, travel memoir, where I described the excitement of the experience for me in comparison with what I saw my fellow travellers going through. Over the years, this experience has never lost its impact. Goodbye to timetables, schedules, and predictability. Bonjour to uncertainty and the prospect of new things to be seen through new eyes. On that first trip to France, there was the extra excitement of waiting for the bar to open when we cleared UK waters and escaped from the tyranny of licensing hours. Beer at 10 in the morning, a hint perhaps of forbidden pleasures to come. On board that ferry and on many of the others that I went on to take from Dover, sometimes Folkestone and occasionally Newhaven, my own excitement did not seem to be shared by my fellow passengers, at least the adults. The prevailing atmosphere reflected a repressed British anxiety at the thought of the challenge which lurked across the water.
Quite right too.
There were snatches of tetchy conversation. Did you pack the tea bags? Are you sure you put those headlight things on properly? No, you can't have any chips. Look at the price of them. Husbands were reprimanded for buying another beer while reassuring queues formed for food, passport checks and duty-free. On the way back, though, it was always a very different matter. The uptight chaps who had piloted their families to far-off lands and brought them safely back were now casual, windswept and bronzed. At the well-attended bars, people, usually the men, who on the outward journey had been too immersed in their own worlds to acknowledge the existence of others, were now in expansive mood and exchanging travel stories. We were on the N20 just south of Limoges when there was this crunching sound. Turned out to be the offside drive shaft. Stopped at a petrol station near Rouen, the damn thing just wouldn't start. I began to discern a common theme to the anecdotes. Disaster and bad luck were the key protagonists, but somehow, against the odds, everything had turned out well. We were towed all the way to Calais and they managed to fix it in time for the ferry. And there was admiration tinged with surprise for the decency of the locals. Only charged us 100 francs would have cost twice that at home. Given that the limit on foreign exchange in the late 60s was £50, if I remember rightly, the focus on value for money was not such a surprise. But I was struck by the lack of stories of wonderful views, beautiful buildings, or even great meals. The feeling was more one of relief at having survived a tricky military expedition. And this was when I began to understand the importance of travellers' tales. Like news, they are not worth broadcasting unless something bad is involved. Though, unlike the news, you need a happy Hollywood ending to make the tale seem right.
Well, Nick, I thought that was absolutely lovely. Very perceptive as well. And how many years are we going back with that?
I suppose it was, 70, hang on a second, bear with me, 55 years.
Okay, and yet here you are. It was as though you knew at that time that over half a century later you would be sitting in Brixton Village recounting that, and it's still the case. It's a marvellous piece of writing, so I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yes, well, would you like to invest in the publishing rights?
I'm sure we can crowdfund it. There's a chap over there who looks as though he's got a few bob to rub together. But let us move on from that point momentarily, because we've got to talk tweets. And this comes at the end of English Tourism Week, of course, when we have the great and the good doing their best to try to rescue something from.
Sorry,
just passing over the. The bagel.
My half of the bagel. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to eat this without making a noise. But anyway, go on. You go ahead.
So my time to talk. So you can get on with that while I take. Take the microphone. So, and if you hear any noises off, dear listener, that is because we have an extraordinary overstuffed bagel, which Mick is trying to overstuff as we speak. And he's also looking for some kind of napkin in which to clean up.
There is something called a
lemon fresh wipe. There we are. I eat the thing before you get that, because otherwise.
No, I thought you meant eat the lemon fresh wipe. Have you?
but this is very, very timely, because thank you for your responses to a tweet I put out about London being the crime capital of the world, and we are sitting in a lovely place in London. This is courtesy of the Conservative Party, which is putting out at the end of English Tourism Week a lot of information which appears to be entirely designed to scare tourists off. Here we are in London, gripped by the tendrils of rising crime. London citizens stay inside. The streets are quieter at night than they used to be. A 55% increase in knife crime since the Labour mayor seized power has the metropolis teetering on the brink of chaos. And look, it's even worse if you go further north. If you go to Birmingham, for example, the Conservatives, the ruling party, warn you of rotting rubbish and boarded up buildings. And anyone planning to go to Manchester should know that it's been branded the worst city in Europe for eco-friendly transport, at least. Anyway, I popped that out, and we actually had a response from none other than Carol Vorderman. Yes, her. And she wrote, the Tories not just prepared to destroy every public service, element of safety, defence, healthcare, education have turned their pathetic firepower onto tourism. So thank you for that, Carol. Mike Bird, meanwhile, addressing me directly, says the usual nonsense from the travel rent-a-gob, but we always love to hear from Mike Bird and anybody else, Carol Vorderman, anyone at all. You can tweet us at You Should Have BT, or send us an email, and including a voicemail to You Should Have Been There at hotmail.com. yes, You Should Have Been There, all one word, at hotmail.com.
Well, so far the greatest danger to us seems to have come from the noise made by a very charming and peaceable looking owners of shops and small restaurants putting out their tables ready for the lunchtime rush. In your role as what was it, travel rent-a-god, I must...
Rent-a-gob! Well, we are talking on Easter Day, so rent-a-god, I will take that.
You will take that. Well, maybe we should put out a tweet or an X to everybody. Rent-a-gob or rent-a-god? You vote for Simon Calder's status in the travel business. I wanted to ask you on this... it's Easter Sunday when we're recording this. How the Great Easter Escape has been going?
Well, most people who wanted to escape, despite it being the record Easter at Manchester, Bristol, Newcastle, Edinburgh airports, have got away absolutely fine. Very few problems in the air. A different story if you were trying to get onto a train. And it's been a very lively weekend. Loads of football matches with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of fans travelling, finding it very, very difficult because, well, we knew that the West Coast Main Line was going to be closed south of Milton Keynes, meaning that London is cut off from the West Midlands, from North West England, North Wales and Southern Scotland. I did actually manage to make it, and this is all through the Easter weekend, of course, on Good Friday from Manchester to London, on other trains with a single change of train, oddly, in Banbury, of all places. It took about 4 hours altogether, but it was perfectly pleasant, not too crowded. However, if depending when you're listening to this, trying to get from Manchester to Leeds via Huddersfield is going to be the work of a couple of hours, and you're going to be on a bus as far as Huddersfield from Manchester. That's going on for a week, by which stage we'll be into more rail strikes, of course. But the weirdest thing has been what's been going on in the Great Western Railway, which all the way through Easter has had massive problems, flooding, signals, points, emergency engineering works on Sunday morning, just an extraordinary range of mishaps, which I'm sure says something about the state of broken Britain.
Well, without getting bogged down in too much misery, let's go back to the idea of type 1 travel fun. That's the idea that holiday making is a source of enjoyment. This is how Johnny Bealby of the adventure travel company Wild Frontiers put it when we asked him, of all the places you've been to, which was the one you would most like to go back to?
The place I always go back to is India. I think, Simon, you probably get asked the same question as me, you know, running a travel company, being a travel writer, what's your favourite place? It's an impossible question to answer because I think everywhere has something special. And if you're prepared to jump in and get involved, you will find great experiences wherever you go.
Now, at the risk of being a wet blanket, as usual, I think we should think about the possibility that there are places on the globe where even type 2 fun is not readily on offer, let alone type 1 fun. Here's Mike Richards again on Port Moresby.
Yeah, so this is the capital of Papua New Guinea, and I had been warned by a couple of people I knew that had been. They were like, this is... one of the most dangerous cities in the world. And one of the companies I work for, the Economist Intelligence Unit, I think it regularly tops the unlivability index of any city in the world. So my expectations were pretty low as it sort of stood. But I remember I arrived at my hotel and they told me, the people in the hotel, to just not leave the hotel almost under any circumstance, certainly not walk on any of the streets. So I couldn't really see much of the city. You know, I took a taxi around, but I saw a lot of crime, a lot of poverty, sort of destitution in some places. And I think, given that when people think of Papua New Guinea, you maybe think of sort of rainforests and local cultures, at least in the capital. There definitely is that in the rest of the country, but that capital is one place I would say that for most tourists, probably skip it. And it is one there where I would say that safety risks are pretty high, so you have to be a little bit careful.
Well, you've really sold Port Moresby in Papua New Guinea to me, Mike. Thanks very much. And of course, there is a whole television sub-industry, isn't there, about hard men reporting on the most dangerous places in the world. But we're not just talking about danger. We're talking about, well, places which are dull. I've been to Townsville in Queensland and I have no intention of returning there. Similarly, Runcorn isn't somewhere that is going to feature on my wish list again. However, there's places you need to go to just because they're necessary evils, and maybe necessary evils is a good subject for a future podcast, or indeed your thoughts. To post a message on X, formerly Twitter, at You Should Have BT, if there are places that, like, for me, San Jose in Costa Rica, where I have no good memories. I got mugged there on Christmas Day and it was pretty dismal. But on the other hand, you have to go there if you're going to be in lovely Costa Rica.
Well, I just want to go back to Townsville, which I've never been to, but I must say that the name of the place does suggest a certain lack of imagination.
Yes.
Is it reflected in the rest of life?
It's just one of those things. It's a mildly necessary evil, just because it is just inland from a superb stretch of Queensland coast. And you're not too far from the Whitsunday Islands, which are utterly magical. Or you can go inland and you will be in this vast, wide open state of Queensland. So it's just somewhere you have to go to.
Yeah, but what's it like?
What's it like? It's like a very dull version of Crawley, which frankly is saying quite a lot.
Are they twinned by any chance?
No, they're not. But no, Townsville has just, I dare say, look, it's been a while since I've been there. It might have developed some fantastic subculture. It might be that they are probably embracing indigenous culture in that part of Australia. I do not know. If you happen to be in or from Townsville, do get in touch and let me know what I am missing. But I'm keen to know what your places are along those lines.
Well, one which I think might come into the category of necessary evil is somewhere in the Peruvian Amazon, which you actually have to go to if you want to explore the sort of exciting jungles and cultures of the River Marañón, which I believe is it's a mighty river, but I think it's a tributary of the even mightier Amazon. And I once went there while working, actually, and I did not enjoy it one little bit. It really had the feel of a frontier town. Everybody looked rather furtive and as though they were just about to rob you. In fact, maybe the Conservative Party's famous comments about London were actually based on how I remember Pucallpa, which, if you say it as Pucallpa, actually rather sums up how it was. So, really sort of scary place, nowhere decent to eat, absolutely dire hotel. I think fly-blown, mosquito-blown, no air conditioning, no nothing of any interest, couldn't sleep. And then when I went to pay the bill and entrusted my colleague, who will remain nameless, to look after our significant number of bags, because we had quite a lot of recording equipment, and obviously it took me ages to find anybody to pay who was allowed to take my money, and then a long time discussing the prices, including a rip-off tax of some kind, which didn't really exist. By the time I got back, dear me, one of the bags had disappeared, and my colleague, who was jotting away in his reporter's notebook, has someone nicked it? I said, yeah, that's got half our recording equipment in it. So anyway, I would go back to Pucallpa, but only to try and find my recording equipment.
There's odd places. It's not so much, I guess, towns. It's more locations where tough things have happened. And I'm going to take you straight back to Peru. And this was when you and I were searching for Vilcabamba, or indeed finding our way out of it. And I remember
that's the last city of the Incas, I should say.
Yes, and we were trying to find our way back or onwards, and I made the schoolboy error of saying, is X in this direction, as opposed to which direction is X in. Anyway, the very helpful person who wanted to be encouraging said, yes, X is in that direction. We just said yes. We set off for about 3-4 hours through incredibly demanding terrain. It was awful. We finally realized, when I think we met somebody else, that we were walking utterly the wrong direction. And I can't derive any fun from that. It was just hard going and unpleasant.
Yes, but I think that comes under the category of operator error, doesn't it, really? And also, you might not have derived much fun from it at the time, nor did I, actually. In fact, I was possibly quite short-tempered when we discovered the error.
For the first time, I believe.
Well, it was coming back over the bridge, I'll put that in inverted commas, over a rushing Andean torrent, sort of quite well above it, and it was three birch saplings not tied together, and us not particularly athletic with extremely heavy packs, and we had to kind of crawl across this thing. So I think short temper was possibly the least you could have expected. But I might say that I think this now qualifies for type 2 fun from my point of view, when I can tell everybody about your mistake.
Ah, okay, yes, I can.
So
I can
transferred
see
type, yeah, type 2 fun by proxy or something like that.
Yeah, and look, I suppose a subspecies of this is places where you just recall with a shudder unfortunate experiences. So I'm thinking here of a motorway junction in just outside Lyon in southern France. I'm thinking of almost being killed by a mad drunk driver while hitchhiking through Colorado. But on both occasions, I was rescued by a long distance bus. The first occasion, it was the Athens to Paris express coach, who said, oh, we just dropped a couple of people off. You don't need to pay us, just go and go to sleep in the back. This was late at night. And so me and my pal Tim, it was just a dream trip. woke up at the Eiffel Tower, and the other one was really the Green Tortoise, a fantastic hippie bus going across America, and me and my friend Chris signed up for it, and I think we paid them $100 or something for days of fun and indulgence. So that worked out very well. Anyway, we would love to hear your stories of places you wouldn't go back to, of your examples of type 2 fun where something pretty grim happened, but look, you smile about it now. You can, of course, tweet us, post something on X at You Should Have BT, or why don't you try our thrilling new email account, You Should Have Been There at hotmail.com. And of course, you can attach a voice note to that email, and that will be fantastic. Well, look, Mick, I'm very aware that you have not yet finished your half of the bagel. I managed to do it while you were entertaining us with your notes from 55 years ago and the way that the British Traveller hasn't...
Yeah, well, I'm glad you were concentrating.
Oh, of course. greatly enjoying it. Nothing like some entertainment to go with one's... bagel.
Yeah.
So if you want to come here, Brixton Village, very colourful, lively place, as you can tell, opens early even on a Sunday morning. We're very keen to know, in crime and rubbish strewn Britain, any particular places you would recommend in your hometown where we could pop up sometime soon.
Well, I've just seen a very casual and relaxed looking security man wandering around without a weapon of any kind, obviously, anyway.
We can't be in Peru then.
Did you ask him if he'd seen your bag containing recording equipment?
Yeah, well, I think that might have taken quite a lot of explaining, don't you?
Yes, particularly in Peruvian Spanish.
Well, until next week, from our... Belgian themed, I think we forgot to say, cafe here in Brixton Village. From me, Mick Webb.
And me, Simon Calder. Goodbye.
Goodbye.